This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Grow connects you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights and weekends. There are no subscriptions, no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/try now today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/try now. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
Hello, and welcome to Tales for Life. In each episode of this podcast, we'll explore a folk or fairy tale from a different culture or region and discover the life lessons, values, and morals they offer that we can use today. Join me on the journey through the magical and meaningful world of folk and fairy tales. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Tales for Life, the podcast that journeys through life one tale at a time. Thanks for coming along with me on this episode that looks ahead by looking behind, an episode I've called Don't Ruin Your Future by Pining for Your Past. Quantum physics tells us that time is not linear and that it's how we perceive time that matters. Be that as it may, most of us are pretty comfortable with the idea that yesterday was the past, tomorrow is the future, and today is the present. And, more often than not, we look forward to what's ahead of us in the hope that it will be better than what's behind us. After all, none of us want to think that our lives hit their peak somewhere in our past and that it's downhill from here on out. Putting the past and future aside for a minute, it's important for us to keep in mind that we live in the present, and it's the present that helps determine our future. If we're trying to reach a goal, we're doing that in the present in order to have a better future. If we're enjoying our present, we want to believe that our future will be just as good, if not better. And you'll notice that in both of those cases, the past doesn't enter the picture. And there's a good reason for this. The good old days won't take us to the better future days. In fact, spending time focusing on something that has already gone by just takes away your ability to enjoy your present. Even worse, when you stop paying attention to your present, you run the risk of ruining your future by not moving toward it. In short, you're never going to make anything better in the present or the future by clinging to your past. With just about all matters of importance, our forebears did not neglect to leave us some guidance on this in the form of a story. Several, actually, but one of my favorites for this important point is from Japan and is more than 1,000 years old. It is titled Urashima Taro. Long, long ago, in the province of Tongo, there lived on the shore of Japan, in a little fishing village, a young fisherman named Urashima Taro. His father had been a fisherman before him, and his skill had more than doubly descended to his son, for Urashima was the most skillful fisher in all that countryside. But in the little fishing village, he was known more for his kind heart than for being a clever fisher of the sea. One soft summer twilight, he was going home at the end of a day's fishing when he came upon a group of children. They were all screaming and talking at the tops of their voices and seemed to be in a state of great excitement about something. And on his going up to them to see what was the matter, he saw that they were tormenting a turtle. Urashima felt very sorry for the poor turtle and made up his mind to rescue it. He spoke to the boys. "Look here, boys. You are treating that poor turtle so badly that it will soon die." One of the older boys answered, "Who cares whether it lives or dies? We do not." And they began to treat the poor turtle more cruelly than ever. Urashima waited a moment, turning over in his mind what would be the best way to deal with the boys. So he smiled at them and said, "I am sure you are all good, kind boys. Now won't you give me the turtle? I should like to have it so much." "No, we won't give you the turtle," said one of the boys. "Why should we? We caught it ourselves." "What you say is true," said Urashima, "but I do not ask you to give it to me for nothing. I will give you some money for it. In other words, I will buy it of you. Won't that do for you, my boys?" He held up the money to them, strung on a piece of string through a hole in the center of each coin. The boys were not bad boys at all. They were only mischievous, and as Urashima spoke, they were won by his kind smile and gentle words and began to be of his spirit. Gradually, they all came up to him, the ringleader of the little band holding out the turtle to him. "Very well, we will give you the turtle if you will give us the money." And Urashima took the turtle and gave the money to the boys, who, calling to each other, scampered away and were soon out of sight. Then Urashima stroked the turtle's back, saying as he did so, "Poor thing. There, there, you are safe now. They say that a stork lives for 1,000 years, but the turtle for 10,000 years. You have the longest life of any creature in this world, and you were in great danger of having that precious life cut short by those cruel boys. Luckily, I was passing by and saved you, and so life is still yours. Now I'm going to take you back to your home, the sea, at once. Do not let yourself be caught again, for there might be no one to save you next time." Then putting the turtle into the water, he watched the animal disappear and turn homewards himself, for he was tired and the sun had set. The next morning, Urashima went out as usual in his boat. The weather was fine, and the sea and sky were both blue and soft in the tender haze of the summer morning. Urashima got into his boat and dreamily pushed out to sea, throwing his line as he did so. He soon passed the other fishing boats and left them behind him so they were lost to sight in the distance, and his boat drifted further and further out upon the blue waters. Somehow, he knew not why, he felt unusually happy that morning, and he could not help wishing that, like the turtle he set free the day before, he had thousands of years to live instead of his own short span of human life. He was suddenly startled from his reverie by hearing his own name called. "Urashima! Urashima!" Clear as a bell and soft as the summer wind, the name floated over the sea. He stood up and looked in every direction, thinking that one of the other boats had overtaken him. But gaze as he might over the wide expanse of water, near or far there was no sign of a boat, so the voice could not have come from any human being. Startled and wondering who or what it was that had called him so clearly, he looked in all directions round about him and saw that without his knowing it, a turtle had come to the side of the boat. "Well, Mr. Turtle," said Urashima, "was it you who called my name just now?" The turtle nodded its head several times and said, "Yes, it was I. Yesterday, in your honorable shadow, my life was saved, and I have come to offer you my thanks and to tell you how grateful I am for your kindness to me." "Indeed," said Urashima, "that is very polite of you. Come up into the boat. I would offer you a smoke, but as you are a turtle, doubtless you do not smoke." And the fisherman laughed at the joke. laughed the turtle. Sake is my favorite refreshment, but I do not care for tobacco. Indeed, said Urashima. I regret very much that I have no sake in my boat to offer you, but come up and dry your back in the sun. So the turtle climbed into the boat, the fisherman helping him, and after an exchange of complimentary speeches, the turtle said, Have you ever seen Ringin, the palace of the Dragon King of the Sea, Urashima? The fisherman shook his head and replied, No. Year after year the sea has been my home. But though I have often heard of the Dragon King's realm under the sea, I have never yet set eyes on that wonderful place. It must be very far away, if it exists at all. Is that really so? You have never seen the Sea King's palace? Then you have misseen one of the most wonderful sights in the whole universe. It is far away at the bottom of the sea, but if I take you there, we shall soon reach the place. If you would like to see the Sea King's land, I will be your guide. I should like to go there, certainly, and you were very kind to think of taking me, but you must remember that I am only a poor mortal and have not the power of swimming like a sea creature, such as you are. Before the fisherman could say more, the turtle stopped him, saying, What? You need not swim yourself. If you will ride on my back, I will take you without any trouble on your part. Then, Mr. Turtle, with your kind permission, I will get on your back. The Koisho! He exclaimed as he jumped on. Now we will set out at our leisure, said the turtle. And with these words, he leaped into the sea with Urashima on his back. Down through the water the turtle dived. For a long time these two strange companions rowed through the sea. Urashima never grew tired, nor his clothes moist with the water. At last, far away in the distance, a magnificent gate appeared, and behind the gate, the long sloping roofs of a palace on the horizon. Yeah, exclaimed Urashima, that looks like the gate of some large palace just appearing. Mr. Turtle, can you tell me what that palace is we can now see? That is the great gate of the Ringin Palace. The large roof that you see behind the gate is the Sea King's Palace itself. Then we have at last come to the realm of the Sea King and to his palace, said Urashima. Yes, indeed, answered the turtle. And don't you think we have come very quickly? And while he was speaking, the turtle reached the side of the gate. And here we are, and you must please walk from here. The turtle now went in front, and speaking to the gatekeeper said, This is Urashima Taro from the country of Japan. I have had the honor of bringing him as a visitor to this kingdom. Please show him the way. Then the gatekeeper, who was a fish, at once led the way through the gate before them. The red bream, the flounder, the sole, the cuttlefish, and all the chief vassals of the Dragon Sea of the King now came out with courtly bows to welcome the stranger. Urashima-sama! Urashima-sama! Welcome to the Sea Palace, the home of the Dragon King of the Sea! Thrice welcome are you, having come from such a distant country. And you, Mr. Turtle, we are greatly indebted to you for all your trouble in bringing Urashima here. Then, turning again to Urashima, they said, Please, follow us this way. And from here, the whole band of fishes became his guides. Urashima, being only a poor fisher lad, did not know how to behave in a palace. But, strange though it all was to him, he did not feel ashamed or embarrassed, but followed his guides quite calmly where they led him to the inner palace. When he reached the portals, a beautiful princess with her attendant maidens came out to welcome him. She was more beautiful than any human being, and was robed in flowing garments of red and soft green like the underside of a wave, and golden threads glimmered through the folds of her gown. Her lovely black hair streamed over her shoulders in the fashion of a king's daughter many hundreds of years ago, and when she spoke, her voice sounded like music over the water. Urashima was lost in wonder while he looked upon her, and he could not speak. Then he remembered that he ought to bow, but before he could make a low obeisance, the princess took him by the hand and led him to a beautiful hall and to the seat of honor at the upper end, and bade him be seated. Urashima Taro, it gives me the highest pleasure to welcome you to my father's kingdom, said the princess. Yesterday, you set free a turtle, and I have sent for you to thank you for saving my life, for I was that turtle. Now, if you like, you shall live here forever in the land of eternal youth, where summer never dies and where sorrow never comes. And I will be your bride if you will, and we will live together happily forever afterwards. And as Urashima listened to her sweet words and gazed upon her lovely face, his heart was filled with a great wonder and joy, and he answered her, wondering if it was not all a dream. Thank you 1,000 times for your kind speech. There is nothing I could wish for more than to be permitted to stay here with you in this beautiful land, of which I have often heard but have never seen to this day. Beyond all words, this is the most wonderful place I have ever seen. While he was speaking, a train of fishes appeared, all dressed in ceremonial trailing garments. One by one, silently and with stately steps, they entered the hall, bearing on coral trays delicacies of fish and seaweed such as no one can dream of, and this wondrous feast was set before the bride and bridegroom. The marriage was celebrated with dazzling splendor, and in the Sea King's realm there was great rejoicing. When the feast was over, the princess asked the bridegroom if he would like to walk through the palace and see all there was to be seen. Then the happy fisherman, following his bride, the Sea King's daughter, was shown all the wonders of that enchanted land where youth and joy go hand in hand, and neither time nor age can touch them. Each day there were new joys and new wonders for Urashima, and so great was his happiness that he forgot everything, even the home he had left behind, and his parents, and his own country. And 3 days passed without his even thinking of all he had left behind. Then his mind came back to him, and he remembered who he was, and that he did not belong to this wonderful land or the Sea King's palace, and he said to himself, "Oh dear, I must not stay on here, for I have an old father and mother at home. What can have happened to them all this time? How anxious they must have been these days when I did not return as usual. I must go back at once without letting one more day pass." And he began to prepare for the journey in great haste. Then he went to his beautiful wife, the princess, and bowing low before her, he said, "Indeed, I have been very happy with you for a long time, Otohime-sama," for that was her name, "and you have been kinder to me than any words can tell. But now I must say goodbye. I must go back to my old parents." Then Otohime-sama began to weep and said softly and sadly, "Is it not well with you here, Urashima, that you wish to leave me so soon? Where is the haste? Stay with me yet another day only." But Urashima had remembered his old parents, and in Japan, the duty to parents is stronger than everything else, stronger even than pleasure or love, and he would not be persuaded, but answered, "Indeed, I must go. Do not think that I wish to leave you. It is not that. I must go and see my old parents. Let me go for one day, and I will come back to you." "Then," said the princess sorrowfully, "there is nothing to be done. I will send you back today to your father and mother, and instead of trying to keep you with me one more day, I shall give you this as a token of our love. Please take it back with you." And she brought him a beautiful lacquer box tied about with silken cord and tassels of red silk. "It does not seem right for me to take yet another gift from you after all the many favors I have received at your hands. But because it is your wish, I will do so." And then he added, "Tell me, what is this box?" "That," answered the princess, "is the Tamate Bako, box of the jewel hand, and it contains something very precious. You must not open this box, whatever happens. If you open it, something dreadful will happen to you. Now promise me that you will never open this box." And Urashima promised that he would never, never open the box, whatever happened. Then bidding goodbye to Otohime-sama, he went down to the seashore, the princess and her attendants following him. and there he found a large turtle waiting for him. He quickly mounted the creature's back and was carried away over the shining sea into the east. At last the turtle carried him into the bay he knew so well, and to the shore from whence he had set out. He stepped onto the shore and looked about him while the turtle rowed away back to the Sea King's realm. But what is the strange fear that seizes Urashima as he stands and looks about him? Why does he gaze so fixedly at the people that pass him by? And why do they in turn stand and look at him? The shore is the same and the hills are the same, but the people that he sees walking past him have very different faces to those he had known so well before. Wondering what it can mean, he walks quickly towards his old home. Even that looks different, but a house stands on the spot, and he calls out, "Father, I have just returned!" And he was about to enter when he saw a strange man coming out. "Perhaps my parents have moved while I have been away and have gone somewhere else," was the fisherman's thought. Somehow he began to feel strangely anxious. He could not tell why. "Excuse me," said he to the man who was staring at him, "but till within the last few days I have lived in this house. My name is Urashima Taro. Where have my parents gone whom I left here?" A very bewildered expression came over the face of the man, and, still gazing intently on Urashima's face, he said, "What? Are you Urashima Taro?" "Yes," said the fisherman, "I am Urashima Taro." "Ha ha," laughed the man, "you must not make such jokes. It is true that once upon a time a man called Urashima Taro did live in this village, but that is a story 300 years old. He could not possibly be alive now." When Urashima heard these strange words, he was frightened and said, "Please, please, you must not joke with me, for I am greatly perplexed. I am really Urashima Taro, and I certainly have not lived 300 years. Till 4 or 5 days ago, I lived on this spot. Tell me what I want to know without more joking, please." But the man's face grew more and more grave, and he answered, "You may or may not be Urashima Taro. I don't know. But the Urashima Taro of whom I have heard is a man who lived 300 years ago. Perhaps you are his spirit, come to revisit your old home?" "Why do you mock me?" said Urashima. "I am no spirit. I am a living man. Do you not see my feet?" And don, don, he stamped on the ground, first with one foot and then with the other, to show the man, as Japanese ghosts have no feet. "But Urashima Taro lived 300 years ago. That is all I know. It is written in the village chronicles," persisted the man, who could not believe what the fisherman said. Urashima was lost in bewilderment and trouble. He stood looking all around him, terribly puzzled, and indeed, something in the appearance of everything was different to what he remembered before he went away. And the awful feeling came over him that what the man said was perhaps true. He seemed to be in a strange dream. The few days he had spent in the Sea King's palace beyond the sea had not been days at all. They had been hundreds of years. And in that time his parents had died, and all the people he had ever known, and the village had written down his story. There was no use in staying here any longer. He must get back to his beautiful wife beyond the sea. He made his way back to the beach, carrying in his hand the box which the princess had given him. But which was the way? He could not find it alone. Suddenly he remembered the box, the tamate bako. "The princess told me when she gave me the box never to open it, that it contained a very precious thing. But now that I have no home, now that I have lost everything that was dear to me here, and my heart grows thin with sadness, at such a time, if I open the box, surely I shall find something that will help me, something that will show me the way back to my beautiful princess over the sea. There is nothing else for me to do now. Yes, yes, I will open the box and look in." And so his heart consented to this act of disobedience, and he tried to persuade himself that he was doing the right thing in breaking his promise. Slowly, very slowly, he untied the red silk cord. Slowly and wonderingly, he lifted the lid of the precious box. And what did he find? Strange to say, only a beautiful little purple cloud rose out of the box in three soft wisps. For an instant it covered his face and wavered over him as if loath to go, and then it floated away like vapor over the sea. Urashima, who had been till that moment like a strong and handsome youth of 24, suddenly became very, very old. His back doubled up with age, his hair turned snowy white, his face wrinkled, and he fell down dead on the beach. It's quite the story, and it doesn't end happily. But that's actually the point. This is a warning story, and we would do well to heed its warnings. Let's take a quick look at them. First, we have to consider that many of the things we regard as obligations or things we absolutely must do aren't really what we think they are. I'm the only one that can do that. This will fail if I'm not here. Those thoughts don't serve us and cause us to move backwards to things that we already should have put behind us. Next, there are no just for a moment times. A moment in the past robs you of at least that moment in the present, and then many more of those moments in the future. Like sleep, you just can't make it up. Lastly, nothing ever comes out of the blue. There are usually warning signs. You will feel a little uncomfortable. People around you will give you indications that it's not a good idea. It's our duty to see those warning signs, recognize them, and act accordingly. If we don't, it's almost guaranteed that things will go from bad to worse. Before leaving this story entirely, let's take a moment to reflect on the positive. When you stay in the present moment and act accordingly, not only are you able to move forward, but that moving forward can sometimes take you places you never even dreamed about being. New worlds, new opportunities, and the chance to be someone you never thought you could be are there for you. All it takes is staying in the moment, because from that moment, your future moment arises. Are you ready to move forward? It's pretty easy to do. Just be where you are and move forward from there. You can keep that precious black box of your past, but there's no need to open it. It's just your past. It's behind you. Instead, focus on what's in front of you, and that's a bright future. Keep moving forward, and you'll be amazed where you end up.